This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Good day. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with me this week is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. If you've got a question for our program today, we'd love to have it. You can telephone us at area code 765-496-1999. You can email it to ask@wbaa.org. You can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, I want to start, as I always hope to, with a few questions that come to us from listeners, so I'll get right to those. Michael has emailed us to ask, when will we get more consistent sidewalks throughout the city? This is something you and I have talked about on this program. Mm-hmm. He says two higher-profile areas are Yeager Road north of Sagamore Parkway, where there's a bus stop, but you can't get to it without walking in the street during the winter, and on Grant Street next to West Lafayette High School, where sidewalks are only on one side of the street. He says, I'd like to see better options for pedestrians, particularly in higher traffic areas.
Well, that is a fantastic question. First off, thanks, Stan, for having me here today. This is always a blast to do. But when it comes to sidewalks, roads, and infrastructure, we're restricted by revenue, as are most municipalities. What we do is we have a relatively predictable revenue stream when it comes to infrastructure, but that only spreads so far in any given calendar year. So we have this device. It's a mechanism for us to allow some degree of predictability with that revenue, and it's called a capital plan. And in that capital plan, we go through each street, each sidewalk, each area within the city that potentially could use an infrastructure improvement and put that on the capital plan and then program dollars for that in particular in that particular calendar year. So that's sort of the back story on that. But the fact of the matter is that if there is an urgent need, if we're made aware of something that truly is a hazard in the community, we'll get on it as quickly as possible. But every street and every sidewalk is programmed into this capital plan, and we get to it as time and money allow.
So one thing I've never asked you or any other mayor is, what does it cost, say, to do one side of a street, sidewalks for one block? You know, is there a standard calculation of this is how much it's going to cost for this block, or does it depend on number of driveways, number of cutouts, things like that?
Absolutely. You have the potential to be a great city engineer.
Nobody would ever want that in a million years.
Well, honestly, that is a tough puppy to tackle for sure. So the way it works is exactly that. You have curb cuts. You've got yards. You have the spaghetti of utilities that are underneath the ground that need to be considered as well. You have to get right-of-ways. You have to buy easements. It's not just a matter of looking at a specific area and figuring out where a sidewalk needs to go. And the cost that comes into that is in some cases, actually prohibitive. In other cases, there's just not enough room. You know, there could be property lines, or there could actually be physical impediments to trying to get a sidewalk down there.
I was going to say that's the one thing that Michael's question doesn't address, is that some thoroughfares are just wider than mm-hmm. others. And there's in many cities, there's an ordinance that says this is the minimum width of the street, and it's mm-hmm. different from place to place.
Correct.
But there are certainly streets, plenty of them, that exceed that width, and those would seem to be easier places to find the easement put in the sidewalks mm-hmm. than the secondary streets in the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. something like that.
Exactly. And what we try to do in areas where it is restricted like that is we have the dedicated bicycle lanes. And obviously, if you do need to get into the roadway, because that's designated as a non-traffic area for vehicles, you can go ahead and utilize that as well. But what we've done, you know, we've tried to use our trail system as well to give people an option of getting around town. For the most part now, we've got about 30 miles of trails, and you can get almost anywhere from the north side of town to the east side of town to the west side of town and through Purdue campus as well. So that's a good alternative. But I do realize that there are some areas that if you're, for instance, walking a child, you know, in a stroller, and there's an interrupted space, that can be somewhat challenging. And those are on our capital plan, and we'll get to them as soon as time and money allow.
Do you have a list? Do you mean to say that you've got a list of prioritized projects, that it's, you know, 1 to 100 or something like that, if this is the order in which we plan to do these?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Again, each road, each street, based upon the volume of traffic and the type of traffic that's on it, has a finite lifespan. You know that some streets, because of the material that's laid down there, for instance, if it's asphalt, and the subsurface is, says Cumberland Avenue, you know, between 50 and 70 years old, you know, at some point in time, you're going to have to get into that, tear it up, and put it in a new one. And there is some degree of predictability with that. Areas where they have, you know, heavier traffic on some of our major thoroughfares, such as Yeager Road, such as Northwestern, those areas are going to need repair more frequently. So that is programmed into that that capital plan. And plus, the revenue streams. Some of these areas are in TIF districts, and that empowers us to have an even greater degree of predictability because you know that revenue is going to be there and it can be allocated specifically for that. Other areas, we have to start a savings. We have to realize how much these projects might cost. For instance, Happy Hollow Road. I mean, that's going to be another huge project they're going to be engaging with probably in the next year. We're going to start some pre-construction meetings this year and probably start getting into the heavy construction of it next year in 2016. That's very involved. That's going to be very expensive, and it's going to be very interruptive, basically to the same point as Cumberland Avenue has been for our community. And again, that's all planned out. We've been in conversations about this road since 2007. And its time has come. And that has been programmed into our financial plan, into our capital plan. And we've worked with NDOT closely on this project because it's going to be an NDOT project as well. And it just takes a lot of time to do.
And is there a website or something that people can go to see the capital plan in full, or indeed see even the list of here's what we expect to do in terms of the order of these projects, some way that it's easily accessible to people?
Sure, sure. Usually what we do is we'll go ahead and put our capital plan up on our website. But again, it's a project that's always in progress, so it's continuously being updated. But if it's not available, it's usually linked in through our engineer's office, through their particular component on the website, and it should be available there.
This is WBAA's Ask the Mayor. We're chatting with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love your phone calls. 496-1999 is the telephone number. You can also email questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Another question that's come in via email, Zach writes in and says, at Monday's city council meeting, a resolution looking toward public-private partnerships for State Street was tabled due to questions by some councilors. When can the members of the community expect discussion of that to continue, and will that be open to the public?
We have just started making the initial reach out to our councilors today to get those meetings set up. It's actually our councilors that need to get some background on it and our redevelopment commission as well. It's not that challenging of a concept, but we just want to make sure that people are comfortable with how it applies to the State Street project. There's a lot of folks that make the presumption that when you use the term master plan for anything, that you're going to surrender local control. And that could not be any further from the truth. State Street was designed by the citizens. We had their input and made the original drawing by the citizens. And that's the plan that we're going to stick with. The public-private partnership portion.
Say that 10 times fast.
I barely got it out once. Is going to be something that we're just going to try and bring people into the fold with. Again, there is some perceptions about how that might work on a statewide level, and that doesn't necessarily apply on a local level. So we just want to clarify that. We want to answer questions, and we want to make sure that those that are in the decision-making positions to decide on whether or not this is something they want to apply to this particular project know enough about it to make an informed decision.
Does this at all slow down the timetable for the entire State Street redesign?
Not at all. No, this is just another part of the process. And again, the public-private partnership is just yet another option that we can utilize. I wouldn't say that I'm impatient with some projects, but this is a very, very substantial project for our city. This actually is bringing a new gateway into our community. It's going to change the makeup of our downtown area. It's also going to enhance the connectivity between the two communities, Lafayette and West Lafayette. So we want to make sure that we get it done and get it done in a way, and again, not to be critical, but to get it done in a way somewhat different than railroad relocation was done. When railroad relocation, well, I'm having a tough time with some of these today.
Lots of alliteration on today's show.
I know. I should have drank more water, I guess. But anyway, with railroad relocation, as we were cutting the ribbon to finish the project, we were already having folks come back to do some repair work on some of the first parts that were completed. Because it took years to get it done. So we want to make sure that the State Street project doesn't have that type of delay or isn't done in little bits and pieces. We want to do as much as we can, as effectively as we can, and as efficiently as we can, so that we're not stretching this out over 10 or 20 years.
So it sounds like you don't view this in the same way that some projects are viewed, which is done in stage one, stage two, stage three. It sounds like you, in your mind's eye, if you had your way, would like one giant stage one that everybody's in.
Well, by design, that would be perfect. Yes, I'd love to just one great big project. But the unfortunate reality of it is even though it will be one project and it will be budgeted as one project and it will be engineered as one project, it's physically impossible to do it all in one fell swoop.
Sure, it's a long stretch of road.
Oh, yeah. Well, not even that, but you've got traffic to redirect. You've got, you know, easements to worry about. You've got property to buy. You've got things that are going to be relocated. So it is very involved. But by doing it, and obviously at one shot, it will lessen the timeline significantly and hopefully lessen the inconvenience in the part of the community.
Does having the public-private partnership allow you any additional flexibility either on the revenue side of being able to design it really to the maximum specs that you'd like, or does it conversely tie your hands because some of these interests could say, well, we especially want this type of business to be in this part of the block? I mean, where does that come down?
Well, yes. The fact of the matter is it depends. I mean, we have both Purdue and West Lafayette. Our engineers are very intimately familiar with this project and also with their particular operations. And we're working collaboratively to make this work in the best possible fashion. But those types of circumstances, there's a certain level of predictability with that, and there's a certain level of unknown. We're going to be digging up roads that have been around for almost 100 years. We're going to be trying to widen areas that we don't necessarily know what's underneath them. You have to consider drainage. You have to consider traffic flow. You have to consider pre-existing conditions, and some of those things just take a lot of time to work out. And you can go in there with the best guess, and you can use your professionals to make sure that it is what we believe to be the most logical option. But until you're actually physically doing the project, it's really difficult to tell.
Another email question came in to us from Jeremiah, who says, something struck me at the exploratory committee meeting last week. It seems that most of the social services in Greater Lafayette are located in and focused on downtown Lafayette. He says, little attention is paid to West Lafayette. What do you see as social needs in West Lafayette? And do you plan to encourage social service providers to focus on needs specific to your community?
Oh, absolutely. There is a presumption that when it comes to our social services that, West Lafayette has no need, that we're a prosperous community and that, it's filled with professors and professionals. Well, that couldn't be any further from the truth. We are in as much need as any community. And unfortunately, because of the West Lafayette affiliation, a lot of people fall through the cracks. And what we have done is a lot of the decisions that are made on our social services are done in a collaborative fashion. Both Mayor Rozworski and I sit on most of the boards and commissions that are involved in these decisions. And a great deal of the focus of those specific groups do deal with situations in Lafayette. New Chauncey Housing is just one small component of that. We get a lot of federal assistance. We do a lot of renovations on housing within New Chauncey, and those houses then are turned over to folks that qualify based upon their economic stratification. So that there is an existence there. But I think that because, it's something that we've dealt with for as long as I can remember, a lot of what we do collaboratively is titled Greater Lafayette. And just when you are a subdirectional of something else, if you're West Lafayette, then the presumption is that you are a subset of Lafayette for those that are uninformed. And whether you agree with it or not, that's how we title a lot of our stuff. And we here in West Lafayette, are very supportive of our social services. And the nomenclature isn't really relevant. What's critically important is the fact that those that are in need have options to get the assistance that they also so greatly need.
Well, I think what you and Jeremiah are sort of getting at is the idea of your part of Greater Lafayette, I think, is looked at as the more cosmopolitan part, for mm-hmm. better or for worse, mm-hmm. because you've got the university, because you've got higher real estate prices, because you've got more people making, for instance, six-figure incomes mm-hmm. who work at the university, things like that. And mm-hmm. so I think what he's getting at is, and what you're getting at too, is that there is this sense of being forgotten from mm-hmm. time to time, that there are people who are not in those situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because when we have some of our public meetings, we feel that we need to make sure that those of us in elected office are mindful of that. And so for those of us that work very close with our social service systems, it's difficult to understand where people feel there is that gap. But as I said earlier, the presumption is it's easy to make. You know, it's easy to have this belief system about the city being up on the hill that doesn't really require that kind of assistance. But we have at City Hall, at City Hall, we have that information readily available. You can call my assistant and get that information when you need it. And then obviously through the websites and our other social networks, you can actually get that information as well.
Had a call just come in to us from Leo from Lafayette, who asks why the bike path stops at the 231 bypass and the southeast corner of State Street. He says, will that ever change?
Yes. Generally speaking, we have, and again, back to that capital plan thing, we're in the process of trying to make sure we have connectivity throughout the entire city. We have recently applied for a grant that's going to give us some assistance in getting a comprehensive bicycle and pedestrian traffic plan for the entire city of West Lafayette, including Purdue University. We should know about that sometime in the next few months. And that way we will have a comprehensive connectivity with all of our trails and bike paths, and it will be in such a way that people will be able to navigate it easily. And there are, that's true. I mean, there are gaps because of the two different jurisdictions hooking up that create some problems as well. But that's one of the things that this strategic plan, this comprehensive plan, is going to be able to empower us to take care of.
West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis is our guest this week on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. You can phone questions in at 496-1999. Email them to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. On another transportation-related topic, we heard at the end of last month that Amtrak service in the state is going to be extended now through the 1st of April. It had been set to run out funding there, that is, at the end of January. I can't escape the feeling that we are kicking the can down the road a little bit here. We've had three-month extensions from October to January, now from January to April. There's a bill that West Lafayette Representative Randy Truitt has filed with the state legislature. It's now scheduled to be before the Ways and Means Committee, but it hasn't been heard by that committee yet. And of course, they handle all the purse strings. Mm-hmm. Is there reason to be optimistic, reason to be worried? What is your sense? Are you happy enough that we, at least we're continuing 3 months at a time? Or are you worried that we don't yet have a permanent solution that the legislature has signed off on and does what the bill says, which is gives $3 million of NDOT funding to Amtrak every year?
Well, I'm optimistic because if you remember when we first started this dialogue with NDOT, they didn't believe that railroads were part of the transportation system, the T in NDOT. So we've obviously got their attention there.
So you get the sense right off the bat that there have been some minds changed.
Yes, absolutely. And then in dealing with our points of contact with NDOT, they seem to feel that this is something that needs to be continued. You know, whether or not Randy's bill is successful, the fact that NDOT's willing to financially participate again is encouraging also. The fear that we all have is that participation could eventually go away. Local government and state government oftentimes are conflicting because of their belief systems and how they like to see things work. In local government, we have much more control of what we're able to do locally. I mean, some things, you know, Family Express for one, we can't control. But other things like transportation issues, building streets, building roads, we have some level of predictability and control over that. Well, the state's the same way, but it's on a much bigger scale. And they have, when they make decisions that have an adverse impact on something, whether it be a highway that was designated to go through, whether it be a sharing agreement with a particular municipality and a road, or whether it be Amtrak, they look at things and with a greater sense of scale. Yet when they make a budgetary decision to no longer fund that, the impact to NDOT might not be nearly as significant as the impact to a local community. For instance, our Amtrak spur to Chicago. Well, we were in a very fortunate position to have a united front, present that to Amtrak and get their attention. Now that has transitioned now to where we not only have their attention, they're supporting us financially. Now, Amtrak NDOT's not foolish. You know, they're going to want to see some results. They want to see some things, some metrics met. And Amtrak is improving because they also are encouraged by NDOT's investment. So, yeah, I feel pretty good about it. I'm glad that we had their attention. And we've had dialogue with the folks at NDOT and made them aware of how important it is to Greater Lafayette And I think that is having a pretty strong impression on them.
Since you mentioned Family Express in passing, let's talk about that.
I knew you were going to catch on.
You were talking about a development that's going in, or that's scheduled to go in, where we originally thought there was going to be this mixed-use development, and you were quoted in the paper a couple weeks ago as saying, sometimes these things happen and they just change on you. Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of how that did change, because the residents of that neighborhood are not at all happy about what's going on.
No, they're not. Well, the way it works is it's basically a real estate deal. The original developers that came in with the mixed use made us aware of the fact that they were interested in buying it and that they were looking at doing this particular development on there. And our first response to them was, you need to sell it to the neighborhood. You know, this is a very sensitive area. It's on what we consider to be one of the gateways into our community. So we want to make it sure that it looks right and that it fits that particular neighborhood. And there's a lot of folks in that neighborhood that are very passionate about where they live and about what they patronize and just basically the aesthetics of the neighborhood.
And do not want to see another gas station.
Correct. Well, what ended up happening is the math didn't work on this initial development, and so it ended up going away.
Now, what do you mean when you say the math didn't work?
When people do developments, there's a certain amount of, you know, they're going to pay X amount of dollars for something. So it's a business. So they need to make sure that they're going to generate X amount of dollars in revenue from that development. And in order to be able to do so, depending upon what it is, if it's residential, they have to have so many rentable units. If it's homes, they need to sell so many houses. If it's retail, they need to have so much square foot to be able to market so many products. They need to make this thing work financially. Well, their original design that was accepted by the neighborhood when put to that litmus test failed. So the developers could not get financing. So they pulled the project. Well, the project back in 2007 was zoned in a way that would empower a gas station to go there. So after the original developers left, the property owners were still marketing the property, and it was sold to a company that does the retail and gas station component to Family Express. The city's involvement, it's not our lot to begin with. So there's not much that we can do.
Well, but don't. So I think the question that came to my mind is, I'm sure the one that came to another people's minds, which is, can't the city or the county do something about the zoning to make sure that what you want goes in this space?
Absolutely. And the way that it was zoned would allow for that mixed use development to go there. But unfortunately, it also allows for a gas station to go there. So,
well, couldn't you rezone it, for instance, as purely residential?
We couldn't. The property owners could. It's not the city's lot. So we could look at it from a perspective to encourage those folks to.
Well, but the property owners don't make the zoning rules.
No, they don't make the zoning rules, but it has to be petitioned. And so for us, it would have been somewhat of a challenge to do so. And again, when you look at a marketable item, you need to look at it from the perspective of what's going to be most likely to be marketed there. And like I said, it was zoned back in 07. For that, with the understanding that something of quality was going to go there. And, you know, with what ended up happening, it was not our first choice, to say the least. But it also, because of the fact that it was sold, could have been much worse. So where we are right now with this is, we're making sure that we hold the developers to a pretty high standard. And they've been fairly responsive to what we've asked them for.
So what you're saying is it's going to be a pretty gas station?
Well, you know, I actually told the property owner that. I said, that's just what we need, is another gas station. And he was offended that I called it a gas station. I said, well, it's a grocery store that sells gas. So, but anyway, it's one of those things. It's unfortunately, there are certain things we can control and certain things we can't. And when something's zoned a specific way, you know, there are certain things that can go in there. And, you know, with the history of that particular parcel, that's what ended up happening.
I wanted to touch base with you also on something we mentioned a couple of shows ago. You had said that a couple of the trash trucks that the city owns were being retrofitted to use compressed natural gas. Mm-hmm. This was in the scope of the discussion about, could you buy gas from the city gas CNG mm-hmm. facility that's going in, mm-hmm. the city bus facility. I wanted to touch base with you because you said that there was a worry that the extreme cold might have a deleterious effect on the facilities that are being retrofitted onto these trash trucks. We've, of course, had a couple of sub-zero snaps here. Mm-hmm. What has been the efficacy of that technology?
I have not had any complaints. I haven't heard of anything going down. I haven't heard of anything not functioning on this side of the river. The buses are still going. Our vehicles are still rolling out and getting things done. And actually, it hasn't been that cold. Today's probably one of the, you know, the temperatures dropped lower than most, and we haven't had any negative feedback from that as well. You know, we get more challenges with how we plow snow, not what width we plow snow.
So what does that mean for your thinking in terms of retrofitting the rest of the fleet or buying additional CNG vehicles and then having a relationship with City Bus, which mm-hmm. would be, of course, beneficial to them economically, mm-hmm. especially with gas prices, you know, petrol prices as low as they are mm-hmm. now? Does that mean that you would pursue that relationship we talked about a couple of months ago where you might, at least in the short term, buy from their CNG facility?
Sure, sure. That's something we're still looking at. In talking to my street commissioner about how these things benefit the community, there are certain applications where the CNG is really beneficial and others where it's not. And Doug Payne, he's still relatively new, and he's doing sort of an overall assessment to see which works best and which doesn't. But he knows that I encourage it, and that's always a good motivator for him. So he's looking into it pretty well, and hopefully it'll work out. I mean, hopefully, you know, with Marty Sennett and what he's doing down there at the bus company, that seems to be a viable option for us all.
We also talked on a previous show about the possibility of having a city council district that was primarily student-driven, that was possibly going to be represented by a student. There is a young woman, we'll say, in the opposite political party from the one you belong to, who has filed to try to do just that. Mm-hmm. Leaving politics aside for a second, mm-hmm. what's your impression of that as something that could happen as the general election comes up later this year?
One of the major components of annexation was to make sure that our 40,000 visitors had some representation within local government. It's imperative that they do. I mean, this is their home, whether it be for 9 months a year or for 6 years straight. We like to see our students involved. We, through doing interviews with the exponent, with talking to our students, I speak to I don't know how many different student groups a year, we try to make them aware that this is their hometown too. And that the more they know about their hometown, whether, again, it be temporary or forever, the better a community that we are as a whole. So this is great. It's good stuff. You know, and again, we're still in the infancy of going from a class three to a class two city. There's going to be a lot of growing pains. You know, there's going to be different things that we're going to be doing within our own particular structure, such as the changing of the meetings, the number of people that serve, having a clerk instead of a clerk treasurer, having a controller, all different kinds of things. But the fact that we're still here in the public service business requires that we get as much subjective input as we can to do the right thing for our community. And I think having a student there, regardless of the political affiliation, is critically important for us.
I couldn't help but notice you referred to them as 40,000 visitors. Mm-hmm. That is not to call them 40,000 residents. It would seem like in your head they have a slightly different stake in what happens in the city than the people who live here 12 months a year like you do.
Well, not necessarily. That was just, I guess I could say that I slightly misspoke. But we call them actually student residents. And Mike Pickett has often challenged me on the fact that I talk about our visitors, but they're student residents and they have a vested interest as well. Like I said, when I talk at the student meetings and things, it's their knowledge of our community sometimes is amazing and sometimes it's disappointing. And that's why I think having representatives within our political structure is just a good thing.
In just our last minute of the show here, I want to ask you the same thing I've been asking of the other mayors, which is tell me something you want to go better in 2015, a sort of New Year's resolution, if you will, than it went in 2014, or something you want to improve upon in the city in this calendar year.
I would say that we can always do better with making sure that what we have insofar as development is the best fit for our community. You know, I think that as a general group, I think we provide pretty good services. I think that we in West Lafayette, the employees that work there do such a great job. The department heads do a fantastic job. They really get the public servant ideal. But I think a lot of times when you're looking around and you see a community like us that's growing exponentially, you got to make sure that things go well. You know, Family Express was a disappointment. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that has any question in their mind how I feel about it. You know, the owner knows that. But the fact of the matter is there are certain things that we can control and certain things that we can't. You know, we have been trying to make sure that the APC understands that we need to have an overlay for our entire city. We need to have a zoning plan for our entire city. You know, we need to be able to say that this is how we see the city of West Lafayette, not only in 2015, but in 2050, and make sure that's how we fit. So I think planning, development, getting an overlay, getting things done like that is something that we can definitely do a lot better with.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks for your time, as always, and we look forward to doing it again next month.
All righty. Thanks so much, Dan.
And please do join us next week at this time for our chat with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. If you've got questions you'd like to pose in advance, send those to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them @WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a good rest of your day.